Doesn't that computer know who you
don't
are?
Don't they have any idea?
Bow down to the Tech Talk host.
That's right. That's right. That's right. That's right.
Behold the glory that is me.
A little while ago, I was installing some software, and I ran across this exact same
thing. I find you pompous, judgmental, and completely self-absorbed. Would you be my friend?
Onto a Windows Vista machine.
You would think.
You'd think there'd be no problem.
How could there be a problem with that?
I'd say in a given week, I probably only do about 15 minutes of real, actual work.
Directory permissions with config.msi directory, blah, 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 blah. This is Tech Talk. Good morning, this is Tech Talk, and you've got Michael Tech Talk Kassler here this morning. No Dave Sanaki, though. He's once again deserted us. You know what, though? He sent me a very nice message this morning. Shouts out to Dave. Dave, we'll miss you today, especially because we're going to have such a great show with or without Dave. Sans Dave Sanaki, we're still going to be plugging away here. We've got not only, of course, the inimitable, the ubiquitous, the always president, always geeky and great Jay Garman is going to be on with us in about 10 minutes or so. He's going to give us the update on last week's geek trivia question, but also to something new for us to cogitate about. But also, we've got, you may remember now, a few weeks ago, I don't even know how many weeks ago it was now, maybe 4 or 5 weeks ago or so, we wound up having one of our cool sites of the week being the free.kaseya.net product, a very, very cool, very comprehensive piece of equipment to put into your software tool bag that would let you remotely access, remotely manage, and find out a lot of information and do a ton of stuff to your computers that you couldn't get hands on to, whether you're in a work or in your home environment or even just trying to help out some friends. And we mentioned that. Kaseya noticed it that we mentioned them and reached out to us, actually, in this case, and said, hey, we'd like to tell you a little bit more about it. And so today we're going to have Chad Nifke. I hope I'm pronouncing his name right. He'll tell us in a little bit. Chad Nifke from Kaseya is going to be on shortly after Jay, and we'll talk about that. Of course, as always, what brought us Kaseya is the cool sites of the week. We're going to have cool sites of the week at the end of the show, too, so you'll want to stay tuned and listen to that, as well as the podcast-only song of the week, which is never, never a miss. Although, if you're listening live or on Ustream, I apologize. You're not going to hear it. You're going to have to go and listen to the podcast in order to find that song, because I like to play stuff that sometimes just isn't quite appropriate for live air, but you probably already know that about me already as well, so you'll hear something equally as good, but just slightly cleaner and different. And I should mention, you know, Ustream, we did switch for many, many, many moons. We were using Justin.tv. They were a good provider for us. We ran into a few things that we wanted to do and we just couldn't with Justin, and we were a little dissatisfied with some of the aspects. The service probably wouldn't affect most people, but it did us just because of our unique situation here. So we made the decision to switch over to Ustream. So if you want to find us now live, you can go to you can always go to www.wrlr.fm. You'll see all the lineup of all the programming, but there are links in there too to send you to Ustream.tv. Do a search up there for WRLR. You can type in the full URL, ustream.tv/channel/wrlr-live-broadcast. But you know what? Just type in WRLR up in the search bar. It's going to be a lot easier. You'll find you're going to see me. It's really exciting. I'm sitting there. I look like the stream we're working on right now, fixing it up, because it looks like, you know, if you ever saw the movie The Ring, where that that girl walks in that jerky motion across the screen, it's kind of like that. That's what you see when I wave my arms. You're going to see this kind of weird jerky motion, but hey, that's okay. Hopefully I don't freak anybody out too much. And you can also join the chat in there as well, so definitely a good thing, to check it out, and we'll be cleaning that up and making that even better as time goes on. So, this week, it's a week without Dave, but you know what? It was not a week without news and kind of exciting and big stuff happening this last week. One thing I want to bring up right away, everybody's talking about all, you know, the iPad and all this. We had a little difference of opinion in the studio here. Dave was fully believing everything Apple was saying, that the iPad was just going to take the world by storm and was going to be really a great product and very well well, very well received. I somewhat agreed with them, but also said, you know what, it's not going to take too long before you're going to have some good, really good competitors in there that are not going to be locked down with the iPad store and all the other business. Well, it turns out, unfortunately, Dave, I think, was maybe more right than me. The iPad has taken off, has done extremely well. People are not screaming and kicking about the lockdown iPad store. And to make things worse, HP just canceled their upcoming Slate product. If you remember, that was one of the ones from CES that I was most excited about. HP had one coming out. Microsoft had one that was kind of foldable. It was really neat looking, too. That one wasn't nearly as far along in development as the HP Slate, however. The Slate was slated. The Slate was slated to come out in the next couple of months. Sadly, though, they've killed the Slate. Which means there's going to be no competition for the iPad in the very near future anyways, at least not for what the iPad specifically is designed to do, which is kind of hitting more that consumer-level market, videos, music, light web browsing, and things like that. Slate looked like it was going to be a neat competitor. It was based and built around the Windows 7 operating system, which some say may be the reason for its failure. It just couldn't get enough juice into it to keep the battery, to keep the usability of it up and all that. HP, as you may be aware, also recently just invested a hefty chunk of money into Palm, and the very well-liked Palm Web OS. So it may be that they're looking to kind of redirect, and the Slate just isn't worth the money, even though it's so close, guys. It was so close to being out there. Apparently, they decided it's just not worth the money to keep going with it. So we'll have to keep our eyes open and see what's going on with that. One other thing, too, that I found interesting the last couple of days, and I really wish Dave were here. I would love to hear what his opinion is on this. This is related to a security issue in some sense. Google is, you know, we talked a lot last week about how Facebook wants to take over the world. Well, look at this. Google's already halfway there. And it turns out, in fact, that at the same time that they've been driving around doing all the neat stuff that we love now, we've all gotten used to being able to go onto Google Maps and like drill right down and look in your neighbor's window and see them washing the dishes. Well, while they were busy doing that with their Street View and their maps and their other business and all that, it turns out, you know what they were also doing? They were doing war dialing, essentially. Well, maybe not quite, but they were checking out all of the Wi-Fi networks around where they were also taking these pictures. Now, that doesn't mean just your local Starbucks and the open ones. Oh, no. They were checking out your Wi-Fi that you might have in your area, especially if you're broadcasting the SSID, which we tell you many, many times. If you're setting up your Wi-Fi network, don't broadcast the SSID. If you don't know what I'm talking about, you want to do a quick lookup on that. And what they're doing, though, is now they're not necessarily doing this for nefarious purposes. In fact, they're doing it for the best of reasons possible, of course, is they're building up this database of Wi-Fi locations and Wi-Fi hots, you know, not hotspots, maybe not the correct word to use, but Wi-Fi provided areas, not to allow people to get in and crack your Wi-Fi or to be able to use your bandwidth without your say-so or anything like that at all. The only reason they're using it is because of portable GPS location apps such as Google Maps, which you can get on your Android phone, Google Location, which you can also get on your Android and other phones, things like this. Well, they have a kind of a tough time doing so. Foursquare, we've talked about Foursquare, another location-based app, which is very popular. These applications, though, have a tough time figuring out where they are if your phone, say, doesn't have a GPS unit on it, which there's not a lot of them out there anymore, but maybe yours doesn't. Or if, say, you're inside of a house and you can't get to a GPS satellite, or it's quite overcast. I've had this happen to me, in fact, just recently in Pennsylvania. It was overcast, really, really excited about getting out and running. I use Bones in Motion to track where I run, and no go with Bones in Motion because the satellite was covered by the overcast clouds. Well, Wi-Fi locations, knowing where they are, being able to hit them up on the databases with the lookups, means that if they can't get a GPS signal, you can still figure out where you are pretty darn accurately, in fact, especially if you're in a place that has got a number or a lot of these little Wi-Fi spots. So like in my neighborhood where I know, you know, pretty much every single person around me has got Wi-Fi, this location service using those Wi-Fi links is darned accurate. It's within probably as accurate as a GPS link would be because it uses signal strength, it uses, timing, it uses the ones that it can find and the ones that it can't find to triangulate and get an idea of where it is. So the problem with this is that Google didn't tell anybody. They didn't mention it to anybody. They were doing this. And so there's a number of people that are kind of up in arms about the fact that, hey, they're collecting data about our private networks and about our private information, you know, what should be we consider private information. This is why I think it'd be good to have Dave here, because my take on it is, you know what, hey, if you are broadcasting your SSID, you what do you expect? People are, I can't help but know what my neighbor's Wi-Fi is and that it's opening up. I mean, I don't have to use any special software in order to be able to tell that everybody around me has got Wi-Fi. Because I just flip my computer on and it says, hey, found networks. What do you want to do about them? If those are open, you know, it's like putting candy out in front of a baby, you know? It's there. I think that there's got to be defined some reasonable expectation of privacy, and this certainly would not be encroaching on that. You cannot reasonably expect to have the privacy of your Wi-Fi address be restricted if you're actually broadcasting it. It's kind of like saying, hey, you dirty rats, you drove by my house and wrote down my house number. Gosh darn it, that's my own private and personal house number. How dare you? It's the same thing. Look, you know, your house number's right there on your house, and we got to know it in order to get there. So you don't really have an expectation of privacy for your house number. Same thing with the Wi-Fi. If you're broadcasting it, you got it out there. Look, you shouldn't have any expectation of privacy. But like I said, I can virtually guarantee you Dave would have had a different opinion on that. I'd be curious to hear if anybody else has a different idea. Now, you can always send me an email to techtalk@wrlr.fm or send us, drop us a voicemail, 847-984-0847. Or you can also join in the chat right now on Ustream.tv. Hey, speaking of chatting, that's not really a good segue, but I'm going to make it. Anyways, let's give Mr. Jay Garman a call and see if he is around and waiting anxiously and expectantly for us to contact him. I don't know if he might be at...
Hello?
I was just wondering. I was like, I wonder if Jay might have gone to that that little horse race that they've got going on this weekend.
No, for a number of reasons. But for those of you that don't know, I'm from Louisville, Kentucky, and we have the Kentucky Derby here. The secret truth about Louisville natives is none of us ever go to the Derby. That's for all you crazy out-of-towners show up and mess with our racetrack. We go the day before to the Oaks, and all the kids get out of school for that day, and almost all local businesses are closed on the Friday before Derby. So that's when we party. And then we just sort of get back in our houses and brace for impact for the 100,000 people that show up and sort of descend on the racetrack that day.
Wow. Yeah. I actually, believe it or not, in a former life, I used to work at a racetrack. I worked at the Canterbury Downs up in Minnesota, and we did live simulcast of the Kentucky Derby. And looking at the stands there, I mean, it just insane, absolutely insane, the number of people. And Louisville is a pretty decent sized town, but that's a gigantic influx of individuals.
Absolutely. I mean, we're an MSA of about a million people, but like 100 to 130,000 people come to the Derby and fit in this and this racetrack that's, I mean, it's a really good-sized racetrack, but we're still talking about something that's, you know, only a few New York City blocks, and it's got 150,000 people in it, you know, when you count the employees and everything else going on. So the downside of it is that being, you know, a loyal Louisvillian, I hate taking people to Churchill Downs when it's not the Derby, because the facility is designed to hold all those people. And so you can go on a regular meet day, and there'd be 30,000 people there, and it feels almost completely empty because it's designed to hold 130.
yeah, exactly. It's these scattered individuals spread out all over the place. And unfortunately, that was the typical situation in Canterbury Downs. is it just always seemed like kind of half empty, you know, except in the owners club. In the owners club, that was always packed. There was a lot of people in there. But well, anyways, horse racing, that's a whole other conference. That's for the sports guys that were before us, so should leave that for them to talk about. Maybe we can find out later who won and discuss that. I know that last week we had actually a question that I am very interested in hearing about. I didn't get a chance to kind of hunt down and find out, and I usually try not to, even if I do get time. This one I was very tempted to, though. It was about we had all these conversations over the last few weeks about how directors have changed, how lead actors have changed. It was kind of spurred by the, you know, the Fringe thing with the Back to the Future, Eric Stoltz business and all that. And you had mentioned last week, or said for the Geek Trivia last week, that the one of the geek favorite movies that the Oscar for Best Picture, that the they switched the leading role 5 days into the production of it.
Yeah, well, 5 days into production and right before principal photography. And it's The Lord of the Rings.
Oh!
They had a different Aragorn. Viggo Mortensen was not the original Aragorn. When Peter Jackson first started production, he actually wanted Russell Crowe for the part, and he couldn't afford him. And so his next choice was very different. It was Stuart Townsend. And if you're going, who? This is the guy that's mostly famous for being Charlize Theron's boyfriend for several years. His two major film credits, and I put that in quotes, the major part, is as Lestat in Queen of the Damned, the Interview with the Vampire sequel, and as Dorian Gray in the League of Extraordinary Gentlemen. So this guy didn't exactly have like a track record of generating. These both happened after he was fired from Lord of the Rings.
Okay.
But his track record of like taking geek material and elevating it on the screen is not very good. And he recently just bailed on the production of Thor, which is being directed by Kenneth Branagh. So, you know, it's probably for the best that he was dumped, but he was basically dumped a few days into the production. He'd been training for 2 months. He'd been sequestered with the whole cast. Like, Elijah Wood is still ticked off this guy was fired because they got really close during the training. And right before principal photography, Peter Jackson's like, no, this isn't working, you're gone. And get me Viggo Mortensen.
Nice.
Now, that seemed to have worked out, considering it's one of the most profitable film franchises of all time, and they won the Best Picture for Return of the King. So,
yes,
you know, that was apparently a good call.
Yeah.
But Stuart Townsend is still ticked off about it, especially, and I kind of don't blame him on this, when they fired him, they said, oh, by the way, we're not going to pay you.
Oh, even after he spent those months in the training and getting close with everyone and everything?
Yeah. They claimed breach of contract, that he wasn't training hard enough for this, that, and the other. There's probably some truth in the middle between his account and Peter Jackson's and so on and so forth. But, they just flat said, you're free to leave New Zealand now, and we're not paying you anything. So
wow.
I think he holds a grudge.
yeah. That's, that's really, you know, boy, and not even a plane ticket home. Just, just thanks for your time. This isn't working out. See ya. I think Russell Crowe would have been an equally, if not even worse, decision for that.
Well, yeah, consider that they filmed these three movies over a year and a half, like, simultaneously, and, you know, he's not known for being the easiest guy to work with, so a year and a half sequestered in New Zealand, doing. I just imagine somebody might have gotten punched in the face at least once by Russell Crowe.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Well, and you know, and I was trying to do this, of course, while watching the movies too. Was you know, think back to the books and remember. Try to remember my mental image of these people and. You know, for Aragorn, I don't know. Viggo fits pretty well. The nice thing about Mortensen too is that although he's been around in a lot of things, he's one of those kind of more chameleon-like actors that he just seems to sort of blend into whatever he's put into. Which,
yeah.
You know, no down to Russell Crowe, he just doesn't quite have that. He's pretty recognizable now.
Yeah, he's what's on the business as a name above the title. So, you know, Russell Crowe in Robin Hood, not Robin Hood starring Russell Crowe.
Exactly.
His name's above the title because you're going to see him and not the movie, and I don't think that Lord of the Rings would have been well served by having anybody that was a name above the title kind of guy.
No, no, and there really wasn't anyone like that. It was all younger or lesser-known actors, you know, more well-known maybe in their home countries, but not so much in America, so which was a good... Now, I'm going to take us off track a little bit. You mentioned earlier filming for Thor. Now, I had not heard. Now I'm assuming this has got to be from the comic books, Thor.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's part of the Marvel Comics movie continuity, which is basically got really kicked off with Iron Man. And if you watched to the end of the original Iron Man, you saw Samuel L. Jackson as Nick Fury show up and recruit Iron Man. It's something called the Avenger Initiative.
Yes.
Which is going to get paid off more in Iron Man 2 next week. And then they cut in a Robert Downey Jr. cameo at the end of The Incredible Hulk with I'm just blanking on the actor's name, and that's going to drive me nuts.
Oh gosh, now you're killing me from Citizen X.
He's an American History X.
Come on, somebody on Ustream, pop it up.
Yeah. Gonna drive me nuts now.
That you know, that happens to me so often too. Is I seem to have like a mental link with people that if they forget something, I'm gonna forget it too. I'm the worst person to look to try and fill in the gap because I forget things like that so easily myself.
Edward Norton.
Yeah, that's it. Edward Norton, exactly. So yes, I remember that. I remember that as well. So that's gonna be very interesting if they're going to actually be able to pull that together somehow and wind up in 5 years with a
and not even 5 years. Thor is in production now and Captain America is in pre-production, and it's supposed to be an Avengers movie theoretically directed by Joss Whedon. Is going to tie all together with all of the leads from these other films.
Wow.
Which I don't know how that is ambitious beyond all understanding there.
Wow.
So
I wonder if they've, you know, it'd be interesting to find out in the back rooms, find out if they've already worked out some sort of a deal. Because I just, the amount of money just to get all those people onto the screen at the same time would be pretty ridiculous, especially with the success of Iron Man, I'm sure boosting Downey's fee, and, you know, Norton's no lightweight himself, you know, and whoever else they wind up bringing in on this. They must be working something out.
Norton's the one they're not sure they're going to be able to get, but they've been a little bit smart about their casting for the other parts. Like, Thor is going to be Chris Hemsworth, which... he's almost totally unknown. His biggest part previous to this is he played George Kirk, Kirk's dad, who dies in the first 5 minutes of the new Star Trek film.
Oh, okay.
Like, that's his biggest role to date, really, in terms of recognizability. And Captain America, the actor playing him is really playing against type. It's Chris Evans, who played the Human Torch in the last two Fantastic Four movies, which everyone's going to pretend never happened.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, I do know who he is now, though, now that you mentioned mentioned that. Okay, so yeah, that is, you're right, that is a little bit smarter. So, yeah, you know, and they could probably... they could probably do a Bewitched with Norton and put somebody else in the spot as long as the role isn't too large and get away with it. So,
or if he's just the Hulk the whole time, you never see Bruce Banner, you're fine.
Yeah, well, yeah, that's true. And in fact, I mean, with a lot of the Avenger League comics, you don't really see Banner. It is just the Hulk pretty much all the time. So yeah. so that would probably be okay. That'd probably be okay. I'm excited about Thor though. That's that would be cool. That would be cool. There was another one that I would love to see. They made some stabs at it and it never worked out. The wizard, the magician.
Doctor Strange.
Yes. Yeah. I've heard of some attempts to make that into a movie, but never actually seen them. And apparently they weren't all that good. So it'd be cool to see that make it.
No,
to the screen.
They weren't that good. Now they've talked about making. Now that Marvel's movies have been so successful, they talked about they wanted to do lower budget B-list heroes, and Strange has been on the list, but I'm not sure how you do a low budget Doctor Strange movie that's interesting or faithful, because I would think she'd be one of the most effects heavy heroes to do. This is the guy that jumps dimensions and does magic all the time and has this giant cape that can help them fly and I mean, all this kind of stuff. And
yeah,
how to do that for a $50 million movie, I don't know. Now,
and there was always the somewhere in the late middle of each one of them, some psychedelic thing where he winds up going to an alternate magical universe in order to pull the appropriate powers together and things. So yeah,
exactly.
Making all that happen would be a little tough. Well, Jay, we should probably, in fact, not even probably, we definitely should should move to the question for next week. What do you have on tap for us that we can have people thinking about for next week?
Well, it is sort of tornado season, and we're coming up on the third anniversary of the tornado that wiped out Greensburg, Kansas, and that sort of thing. And I always like to get a little bit into this without getting too morbid, but I wanted to throw out some stats on F5, or now they're called EF5 tornadoes. These sort of things they always use in movies that are sort of off the charts and, you know, the greatest, most destructive events in nature, and they're pretty horrific, but only one out of every 1,000 tornadoes ever becomes an F5. But ironically, they're responsible for 20% of the deaths. So one in 1,000 tornadoes, but one out of 5 fatalities come from F5s. But only once has an F5 ever taken on seriously a skyscraper, and it lost. The skyscraper is still standing. So what is the only skyscraper ever to withstand a full-on collision with an F5 tornado?
Wow. I know that's something that comes up quite frequently in Chicago area this time of year is, it must be large metropolises are for some reason protected from tornadoes. And the fact of the matter is they're not. There's nothing about the lay of the land, or because you've got these big, you know, columns of glass and steel, that doesn't break up the wind enough to make any difference with the tornadoes, as far as I understand, that it's really just been a matter of percentages.
Yes. Well, what tornadoes like are long stretches of flat land so that they can get their vortexes going, and the vortexes can go all the way to the ground. Mm-hmm. Now, like a vortex cell can form but not touch down. So you guys are probably lucky because you got that big Great Lake there with this big thermal profile screwing things up. And you're not exactly the flattest country in the world, so you're good there. We get tornadoes around Louisville, but they always tend to stay south of town just because that's where the land is flat enough for them to really touch down. But mostly it's luck. I mean, there's nothing absolutely preventing a tornado from turning down right in the middle of a metropolis. And, I mean, that's happened in Oklahoma before, which is not where this skyscraper happened. But, like, tornadoes just run right through, like, Oklahoma City.
Yeah.
But, like, don't think anything of it.
So we will be wondering what skyscraper actually survived
a direct hit with an F5 tornado.
An F5. Is it an F5 or is it would it have been considered an EF5?
I think even this is an EF5. The golden rule with even the EF scale is that anything with a wind speed over 200 miles per hour is an F5. What the enhanced Fujita scale does is it actually got more detailed, because it's actually like you decide after the fact what level of tornado is. and it's by post-event surveys, because you can't really get good wind measurements in the event, mostly because all your instruments are destroyed. So that it's all after the fact. And they literally fill out a survey based on the kind of building and what kind of damage it is and how many there are. And if you add up enough points, you qualify as an F5. And, like, if you read the description of F5, like, you read the charts and all that sort of thing, like, the description is, incredible phenomena will occur. Like, asphalt being ripped off a highway. I mean, that's like a potential F5 indicator. Asphalt ripped free from highway.
chickens,
that's worth a lot of points,
plucked,
by the way, on the survey.
Well, hey, as always, thank you so much, Jay. Hopefully next week we'll have Dave here to balance things out as well. And try to stay indoors, avoid the crowds, have a mint julep in the safety and comfort of your own home. And
that is good advice.
Excellent. So thanks again, Jay. We'll talk to you. We'll talk to you next week.
All right, take it easy, buddy.
All right, take care. That was Jay Garman. So don't forget, you can go to jgarman.net, find a lot more Jay Garman for your reading enjoyment and pleasure. He's got a lot more geek trivia out there, as well as some literature and other great stuff that is good to keep up with. Hey, what we got to do right now, you are listening to WRLR. This is Tech Talk. I'm going to take a short break. When we come back, we're going to have Chad Nifke from Kaseya on. He's going to talk to us about the Kaseya products. So stay tuned. We'll be back in, I'd say about maybe 2 minutes.
WRLR, 98.3 FM.
Since Comcast came into the Lake McHenry County area as the primary source for cable TV, they have shown themselves to be one of the most community-minded companies anywhere. They graciously have provided our studio facilities with cable TV services so that we may monitor nationwide news, and with CHSI high-speed internet service so that we may stream our broadcast signal via the web to increase our coverage area to include a global audience. For more information on their basic cable, digital cable, or high-speed internet services, their website is www.comcast.com.
The Lake County Journals cover what matters most to you. Local news, sports, weather, and entertainment are in print each week and updated often online at lakecountyjournals.com. You can look to both to find out more about your community and your neighbors. At lakecountyjournals.com, there are interactive videos and photo galleries, or even a place to post your comment about a story. Lake County Journals and lakecountyjournals.com, your life connected.
Had enough of living month to month, paycheck to paycheck, with little hope of ever getting ahead, no matter what your age or income level? Tune into the Sherry Freedom Show with your host, Sherry Ridge, every Wednesday at 1 p.m. on 98.3 FM, WRLR.
The Pitchfork Music Festival is coming this July 16th to 18th to Union Park in Chicago. One of the biggest concert events in indie rock, Pitchfork attracted over 49,000 fans last year, and this year's lineup promises to attract another huge crowd. Artists scheduled to appear include Modest Mouse, Broken Social Scene, LCD Sound System, There in Heaven, The Smith Westerns, Here We Go Magic, Panda Bear, John Spencer Blues Explosion, St. Vincent, Pavement, and many more. 3-day passes were snapped up in record time, but single-day tickets are still available. For more information, the website is www.pitchforkmusicfestival.com. Pitchfork Music Festival, July 16th to 18th in Chicago. Pitchforkmusicfestival.com.
All right, we are back. You're listening to Tech Talk on WRLR 98.3. And hey, I'm going to see if we can actually get through to Chad from Kaseya here. Now, it's quite a bit earlier out where Chad is, so we're hoping he's gotten caffeinated. And good morning.
Good morning.
There he is. There, look at this. He's got video and everything too. I'm impressed. Of course, that doesn't help our radio listeners out too much, but at least makes a difference for me. I feel like you're really here in the studio. This is awesome. Chad, I've been probably butchering your name. Why don't you tell us your name, what your role is with Kaseya, and I may be even butchering Kaseya for all I know. I've only read it. So
you got the Kaseya part.
part right. You're right on the money. My last name, on the other hand, you have butchered, but that's quite all right. So it's Ganifki.
Ganifki.
A lot of people liken it to Gesundheit. So if you came from Minnesota, you might be familiar with that phrase as well.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Oh, yeah. Ganifki. Yeah, a little bit of Ganifki. You know, it sounds like something you might eat up in Minnesota, actually. You have a lutefisk, your Ganifki, a little lefse, and you're all set. So...
can't miss lefse on Thanksgiving and Christmas.
That's right. Yeah, so you grew up in Minnesota as well, or spent some. You have some family there, you say, anyway.
So I was born there, but my dad's entire side is from Minnesota. So I'm back there every year. You know, you can't say this here in California, but I go deer hunting back in Minnesota every year. So close to my heart.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, what area in Minnesota generally?
Southwestern.
Okay.
So
okay.
Marshall, Cottonwood, Minnesota, you know, its population of about 1,025. So
yep.
Not many people know it, but
I'm very familiar with Marshall. I know Marshall and I've been around there. I grew up in the southern suburbs of Minneapolis, basically Burnsville, Rosemount, Apple Valley, that kind of area. So
fantastic.
So, yeah, I don't get up as frequently as you do, though. My parents still live there. Maybe that's why I don't make it up as frequently as. No. I know my mom doesn't listen, so I guess it doesn't matter. But anyways, we're way off base here. It's like talking to. I know you were listening when we were talking to Jay, and you know. It always seems to me there's some other great things to talk about, but I know what people want to hear about, of course, is what wound up being a cool site of the week for us a few weeks ago was Kaseya, and maybe you can tell us, before we talk specifically about like the free version of Kaseya and that other stuff, can you tell us a little bit about the history of Kaseya and what Kaseya provides for people, what it's been doing in the last since it came about?
Sure. Kaseya kind of has a fun history. It's always fun for me, at least, to tell a story. And I was actually a customer of Kaseya before I became an employee. But Kaseya was started back in around 2000. So, and it was actually born kind of within, I wouldn't say within, but it has a little bit of the NSA. We'll say that. The two co-founders of the organization were involved with a project with the National Security Agency, and they had to build a framework or a software application to perform a particular project.
Mm-hmm.
And so they implemented this project, built the software, implemented it for the NSA, and basically when they got done, kind of scratched their heads and said, you know what, we might have something here. And so the what we call the Kaseya framework was born. And after the project was complete and they own the intellectual property, obviously,
mm-hmm.
They took it and started what we know Kaseya to be today.
Excellent.
So for the last 10 years, the organization has been really focused on providing this framework to both kind of internal IT staff and IT service providers, consultants all over the world to automate and manage and maintain and update and report on, multiple systems at a time.
Mm-hmm.
So it's really the core framework is a one-to-many system, and that's where that's really the heart of Kaseya, which is the automation factor and you got one guy who can touch 5,000 computers at once. Different than I think today's topic, which is the Kaseya free application.
Yep.
But it's all built on that, highly secure NSA framework.
Yeah. Yeah.
So.
And just, to, I do want to talk about the Kaseya free a little bit more in depth in a second here, but I actually ran across the product initially through an internet an IT service provider. And so I was really blown away by some of the cool things that you can do, as you said, with mass machines, not only on the monitoring side where you can set up situations where you can monitor what's happening with computers, get alerted when things go up or down, et cetera, but also to the scripting pieces too, and able to actually write your own. For me, I'm an old time, a script kiddie code geek. I love being able to get in there, write up a bunch of stuff, figure out like, oh, I need to know if this file gets created, you know, on a certain basis. And if it's changed from the one that was there last week, because if it doesn't change, that means I'm logged in. You know, it's like all this goofy stuff. And whatever I can think of, I'm able to wind up doing it. So it seems like the that more, I hesitate to say more robust, but the more involved actual paid for internet or IT provider piece is really in depth. I mean, it's really detailed. Is it something that's been basically taken from that, what it was originally had it and kind of left as it was, or has it been built and worked up and improved upon over the last several years? I would imagine quite a bit.
Yeah, I think they're so right now, you know, if you want to, from a technical standpoint, we're on version 6 of the software. So this year, what is called the, you know, second generation of the Kaseya framework was released. And that's what allowed us to kind of, you know, come out with this new free product and the other Kaseya versions that are going to be that are available today and will be available. But things, you know, when I became a customer in 2004, I mean, that's my first introduction to Kaseya. You know, it was at that 4.0 version or 3.0 version at that point in time. But what we were able to do then was light years to what we had access to. And, you know, to your point, we had a IT consulting business of approximately, you know, 4,000 machines we were managing. And we couldn't do what we needed to do.
Yeah.
To keep the patches up to date. I mean, back then you were running NT4.0 in many cases on some machines still. Windows 2000 server was around, and you know, if a virus hit that it took advantage of a patch, a security hole in Microsoft's OS, unless you had been out on site that week, there's really not a whole easy way you could have taken care of it. So anyway. I can talk tech all day long because I'm a geek and I can't wait for Thor to come out as well. But you know, that the framework is multiple revisions now since 2000, and it's only continuing to you know, move forward. So
has most of that development and work been done with internal development? Or I noticed, and this is one thing I bugged your PR person about when we were first talking, was I noticed that it looks like there's some external applications like VNC that are built into the operation of the system itself. You know, were there other applications that you guys kind of purchased or made use of, or was most of it kind of built internally?
So most of the development of the application is built internally. But the cool thing about the framework is it can leverage additional technology. So we also have relationships with AVG for our antivirus plugin or module. We also have a relationship with Acronis, which is based out of Russia, for all of our imaging solution for backup and image-based backups.
Yep.
You mentioned VNC. You can also use RDP. If you want to buy the licensing for RDP instead of VNC. So the framework's so flexible that we can actually take a third-party application and integrate it seamlessly into the app. So with the AVG platform, as an example, it's actually in the UI. And I can take and with the same utilizing the same kind of things I would do for patch management, I can update, you know, 5,000 machines with a click of a button.
Yep, yep.
So... cool. Short answer, yes.
cool stuff. And like I said, now I kind of first ran across the product working with an IT service provider, and that made me look into it a little bit more as we were investigating whether to use them, you know, all this other stuff. And I was kind of blown away. And I apparently kind of just happened to, by chance, start doing my investigations of it at the time when you guys were coming out with the free product. The free product's relatively new, right? It's you guys came out with it sometime in, I think it was February around there?
February 9th, yeah. Yep, you're right. Right on the money.
So it's kind of interesting. I think I mentioned even on the show when we first mentioned it, it's almost like the backwards way that people tend to do things these days as far as a business plan goes is coming out with a really fantastic you know, kind of an enterprise-grade product and then following it up with a significant significantly useful application, which is free. What kind of incented that? I mean, what was the thinking behind that direction?
Well, I mean, you mentioned the Kaseya platform today, you know, or up until this point, was very enterprise-ish. You know, mostly service providers using it across, you know, across the world. And we have competitors in the marketplace who are kind of coming the other way, right? It's like, yeah, maybe we're doing things a little backwards here, but we've got competitors that are starting small and growing up into the enterprise. Mm-hmm. And so, to one, from a competitive edge standpoint, and two, the framework is so flexible, we can, without a tremendous amount of development, serve up, if you will, pieces and offer that piece as a product. And so there's discussions that you might want to just buy a couple different pieces of Kaseya in the future, and that you and almost build your own product. Mm-hmm. So the Kaseya Free is leveraging the module within the application called Live Connect, and it's a peer-to-peer connection. It establishes a peer-to-peer connection, so no matter where you are in the world, as long as you've got that machine that you can hit through our framework, and it attempts to make that peer-to-peer connection, you've got a very fast remote control file transfer. You've seen how the app works.
Yep.
The access to the registry, command line, full audit for hardware and software. I mean, some of the features in that product are just phenomenal for what it is, but it's all because it's leveraged P2P.
I was just going to say, yeah, and that is really a distinguishing feature from some of the other players in the market. Because it is going P2P, some of the issues working with the registry, command line stuff and all that, where you would be maybe a little concerned, or especially, you know, file backups and things, where you'd be maybe a little concerned about security. At least some of that starts to go away when you realize, you know what, I'm not working through the Kaseya servers. They don't have some giant server farm where all of the transmissions are passing back and forth through. It's really just there to establish that initial connection, make sure that you've got the right authentication and securities to do what you want to do to that machine, and then, hey, go to it. And now you can put another, and I've got to believe, too, there's some layer of encryption or security that's going on P2P as well. I don't know if it's a true VPN connect or how are you working with security above and beyond just establishing that P2P connection?
Sure, that's a great question. And again, just to, you know, this was built for the NSA. So a lot of people say, you know, the framework was built for the NSA. So they go, they ask, you know, oh, hey, security, is that an issue? And I said, listen, the security was actually the focal point of the framework when it was developed. So we didn't cut any corners. So it is a 256-bit RC4 encryption. It's a rolling key. We don't even know the passwords used on that. When you're typing your password in, we don't even know it on our end. So you can't request to find out what the password is. We've got to reset it. Mm-hmm. You know, and so from a security standpoint, that encryption point, when you're talking from the agent, your system over the browser to the agent, you're better off than online banking in many ways. So I tell people, you know, I wouldn't be concerned about it.
Yeah, you know, it's funny you mentioned the banking thing. There's so many people that as soon as they hear, you're going to connect to my computer, oh my gosh, you know, I'm so worried about my security. But they think absolutely nothing of whipping their Discover card out, you know, and throwing that. It's like, you don't know where you are, what you're doing. You know, somebody could take the carbon paper even and use that, yeah. You know. So that always kind of cracks me up, the scale. And there's, I'm just, I'm actually, I'm right, I'm at free.kaseya.net right now. I'm just taking a look. Kaseya IT Toolkit is kind of what the whole package is called. And there really is an amazing amount of things, especially for those people. Now, you mentioned like your family is in Minnesota, and if your family treats you as the tech support as my family treats me,
yeah, uh-huh.
I know. know the last time my mom was down to visit, this is the first thing I installed on her computer is I said, okay, you know what? I'm not taking any more phone calls from you. You know, here's what you do. Get connected to the internet, then call me, and then I can tell you what's wrong with your computer. Because you've got, I'm just going to quickly whip through this, is you've got, you know, you can actually... Okay, I take it back. I'm not going to quickly flip through this because I got to the very first feature, and I got to mention this. This is really cool. The thumbnail visual. With most of the applications that I've used where you do remote access and remote management stuff, you're doing either one of two things. You're either doing something like looking at FTP access or looking at hardware inventory or things like that, or you're remotely accessing the desktop. And the thumbnail visual is really unique. I had not seen this before, and is surprisingly just really, really useful.
I know.
I'll let you take it from there and describe it exactly what it is.
Most remote control or remote support applications, you know, they prompt the remote user to, allow me to remote control them, right? So you're kind of sometimes in the middle of the night, you might have to wait, or you don't know if the person's there. That thumbnail view is all about efficiency. I mean, that's the core focus of call it the Kaseya mantra, is how do we make service providers, IT consultants, or you and I supporting our mom or grandparents, more efficient. Mm-hmm. And that little thumbnail refreshes every 4 seconds. I think it's 4 or 5 seconds. And just shows you what's going on, and so it's encrypted. It helps you know if now is a good time to take remote control or to look through the system, or if they are using it, you can see they're using it, and you can start troubleshooting through the other features that you're about to mention, right? Mm-hmm. You can start the troubleshooting process before taking remote control.
Yep. Yeah.
Because you know they're busy.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. You know, or they'll tell you that they're busy, and you say, yeah, I'm typing up a Word document, for work right now. No, you're not. You're on Facebook. What do you think?
You're checking baseball scores. You know, exactly. Your fantasy basketball team.
Exactly. So I'm going to flip through some of these. That's up in the upper left-hand corner. But then you've also, of course, got video chat, voice and IM chat. I think just plain text chat is coming soon. I had bugged somebody there about that. Task manager access. So, you know, the control alt escape, bring up the task manager. You can do that remotely. The event viewer, command line access, you can bring up a C prompt right there and start doing stuff you need to do. FTP access, which means you can access all of the files that are available there. Registry editor, you can get in there and hack the registry, make the changes that you need to make remotely.
That's if you're really upset at someone and you just want to make their life miserable. Get in there, randomly change the registry and make their day, make your day.
Exactly, exactly. Make the nice one is, go in there and make the mouse cursor invisible. So
there you go.
That's always fun. That's always
fun. We'll post that tip and trick.
And then hardware inventory also too, which is great, especially if which is very, very common, is that your mom buys a new video camera for Skype or something, whatever, and it sticks it. You can see at least what it is that she's trying to get, or if the computer's recognizing it properly. And a couple of things that it mentions, we talked about secure communication, but one thing also too that's probably important to note is that whether you're working on this from a really secure firewalled location or outside or not, no matter how the router's configured, you really don't have to worry about opening up the right ports or getting into the router, doing any kind of NAT or anything like that. All that's taken care of. So,
yeah, that's what's nice about that is, the Kaseya system's never trying to talk to that remote agent. That remote agent just asks the Kaseya system, is there anything I need to do on this regular heartbeat interval? Mm-hmm. So it's just saying, hey, you have anything up there for me? And it's, if Michael's requesting a remote control of my system, that my system's just asking the server, anything you need me to do? It checks in, hey, it says, yeah, Michael wants to take remote control. Great, and then it begins to set up that communication. So really, there is nothing coming inbound. It is all an outbound communication. So supporting people from Starbucks, not a problem.
Cool. Cool. Chad, I gotta pull us to a close here. I told you it was gonna go fast. I knew it would.
It went fast.
Because there's so much to talk about with this. It's a very cool product. It's gonna be up there for definitely competing for the top cool site of the year for me, I think.
Excellent.
Just to remind people, it is free.kaseya.net. We were talking with Chad Ganifke, and did I get it right this time?
Nicely done.
Thank you very much. I appreciate that. And Chad, thank you so much for your time. I really appreciate that too.
Hey, not a problem. Anytime you want to talk comics or geek stuff, I'm in.
Hey, there we go. We've got now. Next time Dave's out of town, I'll be. It's early there though. You're not on Minnesota time anymore. So that's impressive. Well, hey Chad, thank you so much. I really appreciate it. We'll be hopefully talking to you again soon.
Thanks, Michael.
All right, take care. Chad Ganifke from California with Kaseya. Definitely check that product out. Oh, my gosh. If Dave were here, he would be cracking the whip. He would be so upset with me. I am going to give you just one, count them one, cool side of the week, and then I am going to get the heck out of here with also two podcast-only song of the week. The cool site of the week. I'm not even going to play the music for you. That's how late we are right now. Speaking of free and cool and awesome stuff, let me give you the freewareguide.com, www.freeware-guide.com, a really fantastic collection of freeware websites, freeware software. It's sorted and organized by the type of application that it is. I've gone through and used quite a few of the little things that are in there, and it's just great. If you're looking, it's a good place to start first to look for stuff that's free. And I'm going to leave you, if you are listening live, you're not going to hear this song, but if you're not listening live, I'm going to play for you the podcast only song of the week is going to be the Polite Dance Song by the Bird and the Bee. So but if you're listening live, I'm going to leave you before John comes on to play some great music. We're going to listen to Carl Sagan, Glorious Dawn, featuring Stephen Hawking through Color Pulse. So have a great week. Thanks again for listening to Tech Talk, and stay tuned to WRLR.
Nothing left to hide.